This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It's Pro Savings Days at Lowe's. Get up to 35% off select major appliances and save an additional $1,000 when you buy four select LG major appliances. Plus, get a free DeWalt 20-volt max 5-amp-hour battery when you buy a select DeWalt 20-volt max tool. Get the job done for less at Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 9/26. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See associate or Lowe's.com for more details and qualifying items.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams whew,
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Karen Reed.
Do you solemnly swear that the testimony you shall give to the court and the jury in the matter now pending shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
Good afternoon, sir. All right, Mr. Bennett.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
Could you please introduce yourself to the jury?
My name is Jason Becker.
How old are you?
I am 36 years old.
Do you live in the area?
I do. I live in Canton.
Tell us a little bit about your education.
My education, high school and college UMass. And I went to EMT school a little over 10 years ago and paramedic school.
Tell me a little bit about EMT school. How old were you when you started EMT school?
When I started EMT school, roughly 21 years old.
Why did you decide to go to EMT school?
I wanted to save some lives.
Tell us a little bit about EMT school. What did it require?
EMT school is a couple months of classroom stuff, and then you do some ride time on the ambulance. Paramedic school is a little different. It's about a little extended, 2 years worth of training. You're doing hospital, ER time, and ambulance time also.
How long did you serve as an EMT before you went to paramedic school?
I worked as an EMT for approximately 5 years.
Can you estimate how many dozens or hundreds of calls you were on during that time?
Hundreds.
Why did you decide then to go get paramedic training?
Oh, I wanted to be on the fire department, and it was a prerequisite.
Did you complete paramedic school successfully?
I did.
Were you still working as an EMT at the time?
I was.
And inevitably, did you seek to have a different job? Did you try to be a firefighter?
I wanted to be a firefighter, correct. Were
you successful in doing that?
I was.
Tell us a little bit about that, sir.
Being on the Canton Fire Department. So I got on the Canton Fire Department, and they send you to the fire academy, where you train to be a firefighter.
So you had EMT training, paramedic training, and then firefighter training.
That's correct.
On the Canton Police Department, did you serve dual roles as a paramedic and as a firefighter?
Fire department?
Yes.
Yes, sir. Firefighter and as a paramedic.
You served as a firefighter and a paramedic?
Correct.
In the Canton Fire Department, does it have more than one station?
There is. There's two.
Is there one station that's larger or smaller than the other?
Station one is the headquarters, which is larger.
Had you ever spent time at Station 1 as a firefighter or a paramedic?
I have. We rotate through both stations.
I want you to take us back to January 29th, 2022. Were you working that evening?
I was.
What station were you assigned to?
Canton Station 2.
Canton Fire Station 2?
Correct.
And that's the smaller of the two stations?
It is.
Were you working with anybody at Fire Station 2 that night?
My ambulance partner at the time was firefighter Dan Whitley.
Was there anybody else who was working at Fire Station 2 in addition to you and Dan Whitley?
Correct. There was an engine company with three guys on it.
Three people were assigned to the
engine, correct.
Were you and Dan Whitley assigned as partners for the day, the week?
Correct. Yes, we were.
Which was it, the day or the week, sir?
The week.
So for the entire week, you're partners with a person, and does that rotate on other assignments?
It does. It rotates.
So on this particular week, you were assigned as partners with Dan Whitley?
I was.
What were your roles between the two of you?
At the time, he was my preceptor. I was a new paramedic at the time. So I was more or less the lead tech on all the calls as part of my training. And Dan's been a paramedic for a long time, so he was there to teach me.
So would Dan Whitley be the lead on the call, and he would help you?
I would be the lead.
You would be the lead?
Correct.
Did you get a call that early morning hours of January 29, 2022?
We did.
What was the call assigned for?
It was a call for Section 12 psych eval.
Very briefly, can you tell us what a Section 12 is?
Sure. It's a transportation order filled out by police, doctor, basically for us on the ambulance that we have to take the patient, whether voluntarily or involuntarily, because they're a threat to themselves or someone else.
When you received the call for a Section 12, were you aware that there were other calls that Fire Station 1 had responded to that morning?
We were aware. You can hear the calls going out each station.
Were you or Dan Whitley any part of that earlier call that Fire Station 1 responded to before you got the call for the Section 12?
We were not.
So your efforts were after?
We were after, correct.
After you got the call to respond to a Section 12, did you head towards Fairview Road?
We did.
Tell us a little bit about the trip to Fairview Road.
It was a little extended because of the weather conditions at the time. Snowing heavily, windy, low visibility.
Okay. How long did it take to get from Fire Station 2 to Fairview Road?
Approximately 8 to 10 minutes.
Who drove?
Firefighter Whitley.
Now, on the way to Fairview Road, do you sit in the front of the ambulance?
We do.
Take us to when you arrive to Fairview Road. What do you see?
You see a bunch of police lights. Canton Engine 3 was already on scene, so we parked behind them.
Did you have it, without talking about what you spoke about, did you have a chance to speak to anybody at the scene?
We briefly spoke to the Canton police, and they briefed us and sent us to where the defendant was at the time.
Why do you have a conversation with other first responders at the scene before you do anything?
They're making sure the scene is safe to begin with, and they're unseen first, so they have a little more info than what our dispatch would have.
After you had that debriefing with colleagues, were you directed to approach any certain person?
I was.
Where did you go?
I went to the defendant, who was sitting in a black SUV type car.
Were there other persons inside the car with the defendant?
From my understanding, it was one person in the driver's seat.
And what seat was the defendant in?
She was in the front passenger seat.
Did you have a chance to speak to her?
I did.
And the person you spoke to was in the passenger seat of that car, do you see that person in court today?
I do.
Could you point out and describe an article of clothing, please?
Ms. Reed right there, she's in the blue, navy blue.
How long was your conversation with the defendant while she was still seated inside the vehicle?
Approximately 5 to 8 minutes.
At some point, did you and the defendant move to another location?
We did.
Where did you go?
So we went back in the ambulance.
After having a conversation with her, was she cooperative going back to the ambulance with you?
She was.
And did you ask her to be seated in the ambulance?
I did.
Was she cooperative with that as well?
She was.
After she was seated in the ambulance, did you close the doors and get in?
We did.
When you say we, who was with you?
Me and Firefighter Whitley.
So you and Firefighter Whitley were in the back of the ambulance with Ms. Reed. Who was going to drive the ambulance?
Firefighter Sam Park.
Where did he come from?
He was on the fire engine that was already on scene.
I want to ask you questions now about what you did in the back of the ambulance and some of the conversations that you had. Tell us what your role is once you have a patient in the back of the ambulance. What do you do next?
Each patient's different. Depends on what the call is for. In this specific situation, it was more a psych eval, because that's what we're called for. Initial triage questions, is the patient cooperative, uncooperative, combative? I asked her name, her mental status, where she was. I asked her if she was suicidal, and if she was, did she have a plan? Did she want to hurt anyone else? Those are some of the initial triage questions that I would ask.
Why do you ask those questions?
Just to get a kind of a judgment on the patient, reading the patient.
What's your role at that point? Are you an investigator?
I'm not.
Are you in any way law enforcement?
I'm not.
So what's your focus when you're speaking to a patient?
It's basically hearing them speak in their story. In this specific situation, we didn't know circumstances. We just knew that Ms. Reed had found her husband, which she was calling dead on the side of the road. So it was a traumatic call.
So when you were there, you knew nothing about what had happened before you got there?
We did not.
And your role had nothing to do with any of that investigation?
We did not.
You were solely focused on caring for the patient?
Correct.
Did you have any other role other than caring for the patient?
Just making sure she got to the hospital safely. She didn't hurt herself.
During those conversations, are you and Firefighter Whitley doing the same thing or different things?
It depends on the call. I was the lead tech, so you know I'm the one documented, giving report to the nurses, the staff. So I was more kind of getting that information, my initial triage questions, and then just kind of sat and supported Ms. Reed. And
were you writing down information, technical information about status and health on a report?
I was, yes.
While you were doing that, was your colleague speaking to Ms. Reed?
He was.
Did you have a chance at times to hear what they were speaking about?
Yeah, and no.
At other times, did you speak directly to Ms. Reed?
I have.
Can you describe her demeanor or temperament?
Initially, she was agitated because she didn't feel like she needed to go to the hospital. She said the statement she made, she didn't mean. She just kind of said in jest because of the events that she went through. So she was, but then there'd be periods in which she'd be calm, and it would fluctuate. She would have pressured speech, repetitive, but all in all, she was cooperative.
At some point, did you have a chance to speak to her directly about her mood?
About her mood?
About her mood.
I don't know if I understand the question.
Okay. Did she say anything to you about her last interaction with what she referred to as her husband?
Objection. Sustained.
Did she make any statements to you speaking to her about her husband?
Objection. I'll allow that, Akeeman.
One of the reasons why she was saying suicidal stuff is because the last thing she... last conversation she had with her husband at the time was an argument. I didn't feel like it was my role to really find out the details on what was said. But that's what she said to me.
That the last thing she said to him was an argument?
Yes.
Yep. Sustained.
Did she tell you what the argument was about?
She did not.
Inevitably, did you get a chance to bring her to the hospital?
We did.
Did you stay in the back of the ambulance with her?
I did.
Did you continue to have conversations with her?
Yes, I did.
Did you hear conversations or parts of conversations she was having with your colleague?
I had parts.
When you got to the hospital, what happens next?
So we brought Ms. Reed into the hospital, registered her, bring her to the psychiatric section.
Okay. Thank you. I have no further questions.
Okay. Mr. Jackson.
Thank you, Honor.
I have just a moment, Your Honor.
Yes.
Good afternoon, Firefighter Becker.
Good afternoon.
When you first arrived at the scene, there was at least two Canton police officers there still.
Correct.
Do you remember their names?
Officer Sarif and Officer Mulvaney.
Okay. Their cruiser was there. You said that an engine was still there?
Correct.
And was there another ambulance there, or the other ambulance had already left the scene? They'd cleared.
They had already transported to the hospital.
Remind me, you were in ambulance two?
I was ambulance two.
Got it. You parked behind the SUV where you ultimately made contact with Ms. Reed, correct?
I think it was more in front of the SUV because the way the SUV was parked.
Got it. Got out of the ambulance, ultimately made contact with Ms. Reed through the passenger door?
Correct.
Had a short conversation with her there?
I did.
You said it was maybe 5 to 8 minutes?
More than 5 minutes because of the weather conditions.
Okay, nothing of great consequence, I'm guessing, just an initial, I think you called it sort of a triage assessment?
Well, it's more of just introducing myself and asking her how she was doing.
Got it. And then there was one other person in the cab of the vehicle as well?
There was.
Female, male?
Female.
So there are two females, one Ms. Reed, one another female. Did you see any other civilian females out there?
I didn't see.
Okay, but so at least where you were, the contact that you had with Ms. Reed and this other female, there was just two of them, not a third one?
From what I saw, correct.
Did you get the other female's name?
No, at the time I did not.
Okay. Have you since gotten her name?
Based on a conversation Firefighter Whitley and Ms. Reed had back in the ambulance.
Got it. Okay. And who is that other person?
Ms. Carrie Roberts.
Okay. When you first observed Ms. Reed, did you note whether or not there was anything unusual about her physical appearance, meaning anything on her?
She did, yes.
Describe that for the jurors, please.
She had some blood around her mouth, her neck area.
At that point, were you concerned about, obviously you're concerned mainly about her safety and getting her safely to the hospital, correct?
That's correct.
Were you worried that that might be her blood?
Well, she had said that she had given CPR to her husband.
Okay, you jumped a question ahead. I was going to say, did she tell you that it was in fact not her blood?
She did, so that kind of, in a way, ruled it out.
Okay.
No injury for me.
And you didn't notice anything about her that looked like she was physically injured or physically in harm?
I did not.
Okay. She indicated that she had given CPR, mouth-to-mouth, attempts at mouth-to-mouth resuscitation to Mr. O'Keefe, correct?
She did.
And that would account for the blood on her face and in her hair and on her neck?
That's what she told me.
Okay. And based on your observations of her, you didn't have any reason to quarrel with that?
Correct.
Okay. You indicated that her tone was somewhat rapid and repetitive. Is that right?
It fluctuated. So at times it was, yes.
Did it appear to you at that time that she had gone through a pretty significant trauma, as best you were trained at the time?
Objection.
A little bit more of a foundation, I'll give it to you.
Sure. Have you ever, in your course of training, seen individuals who have gone through some sort of a traumatic event?
Frequently.
Frequently.
Everyone's different, though.
Understood. Obviously, everybody's got their own personalities in the way of dealing with those things, right?
Sure.
Have you been able to, through your training, assess whether, at least in your belief, your observations, if someone has gone through a relatively traumatic event, as opposed to just someone whistling down the sidewalk?
Yes.
Okay. Did it appear at that time, when you're interacting with Ms. Reed, that she was showing the signs consistent of having gone through a trauma?
At the time, yes.
Okay. So, hence the rapid speech, the repetitive speech, things of that nature?
Correct, for her. For the defendant, some people don't have rapid,
repetitive
speech.
I'm just talking about your observations of her at that time.
Yes sir.
Her demeanor was consistent with having gone through a significant trauma.
For the situation, sure, yes.
Oh, okay. You said that she went from calmness to agitation. The agitation you accounted for
being, I don't necessarily want to go to the hospital. I don't want to be sectioned, correct?
She felt like she didn't, you know, she didn't need to. It wasn't, she wasn't going to act on her comments about wanting to harm herself.
You called it, I think, in a report, it's SI, suicidal ideation.
Correct.
That's obviously of great concern to you and your partners when you're assessing a patient, correct?
That's right.
You don't want to leave someone on their own if they're going to self-harm, correct?
That's correct.
You pretty quickly assessed, I'm guessing, Firefighter Becker, that she was not, in fact, in the position to self-harm, that I think you said that the statements she originally made, if John dies, I don't want to live, were not necessarily at the level of actual suicidal ideation. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, at the time I believed her because of the, you know, the information we got and what she went through.
I'm sorry, I didn't quite understand your answer.
Sorry, can you repeat your question?
It's probably my fault. At the time that you assessed her, even though she had made some comments about if John doesn't live, I don't want to live either, you did not elevate that to the level of her being suicidal at that moment.
So I couldn't rule it out, but
okay.
You know, we I didn't think it was a huge threat at the time.
Understood.
Couldn't rule it out, so that's why, you know, we had to take her to the hospital.
Understood. I mean, you had a Section 12. You had to take her irrespective of what you ruled in or out, right?
Right.
Okay. Firefighter Whitley was with you in the back of the ambulance the entire time you were with Ms. Reed, correct?
Not the entire time. He was, before we started transporting, he was kind of in and out trying to find more of, you know, talking to the police officers, find more of a story of, you know, what happened,
okay.
why we're taking the defendant on a Section 12.
Once you and Ms. Reed were in the back of the ambulance, Firefighter Whitley then joined you in the back of the ambulance?
He did.
How much time lapsed?
It was a couple minutes at the most.
Okay, so it wasn't a lengthy amount of time?
It wasn't lengthy.
And he was with you during the transport, along with Ms. Reed, for the whole transport back to Good Sam?
To Good Sam, yes.
And you ended. You said on direct examination, I think your phrase was, all in all, she was cooperative with us.
For the majority of the transport, yes.
Okay. Never became combative, never got physical, nothing like that?
No.
Okay. She did refer to Mr. O'Keefe as her husband or her spouse?
That's correct.
You're aware of HIPAA rules, obviously. You're in the medical field, correct?
Correct.
You're aware at the time that HIPAA rules would demand or dictate that unless you're a spouse or a parent or a child, there are certain rules against getting or providing information to someone who isn't one of those close family members, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. You previously indicated on direct examination that, I think your words were, that Ms. Reed indicated that her last conversation she had with her husband was an argument, correct?
Correct.
You've previously testified about that statement in other particulars, right? Other hearings.
I have.
You're paraphrasing. You didn't write down what she said about her previous interactions with Mr. O'Keefe, and you didn't record those on a tape recorder, correct?
I wrote down in my report that she said she had an argument.
Right. You didn't write them down at the time. That was a bad question on my part. You weren't taking notes as she was speaking.
Yeah, I could have been. I mean, it just, it's kind of for every call, we jot down notes on like a notepad, just
okay.
So, you know, when we give the staff a report, we can read off it.
Do you have those notes?
I don't.
Okay. Do you think you took notes or no?
To be honest, I'm not sure. I could have been typing them on the computer. That's what we typed the report on.
Okay.
At the time.
Do you have an independent recollection of taking notes, either handwritten or on a computer, as you sit here right now?
I couldn't tell you if I did one or the other. Sometimes
okay.
I write on the computer, sometimes I don't.
Or you might not have written anything down, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So, in any event, you weren't taking down, even if you were taking notes, you weren't taking down verbatim quotes of what she was saying. You were paraphrasing the information that was coming to you, correct?
That's correct.
All right. You had previously said or testified that the last time, let me rephrase that just a little bit. You previously indicated in recounting what it was that Ms. Reed actually said to you was something along the lines of she was upset because her last words to him were, because of her last words to him being in anger.
I object.
I'm going to allow the question.
Is that correct?
Well, I probably phrased it a little wrong. Wrongly, the last words, it was the last conversation.
Okay, that wasn't my question. My question is a simple one. In a previous hearing, did you use the phrase, her last words to him?
Previous, yes, I did. I did.
And that was at a hearing where you're under oath, just like you are now, correct?
Correct.
That was a little closer in time than we are now. It was maybe a year ago, correct?
Correct.
Actually, my mistake. It was about 2.5 years ago. It was a grand jury, correct?
Grand jury was before, yes.
Okay. And the phrase that you used was, and I want to concentrate on that for just a quick second, Firefighter Becker.
Sure.
The phrase that you used at that time was that she said, quote, like her last words to him. She was upset about her, quote, last words to him. Is that right?
I object.
All right. Can I see counsel at sidebar, please?
May I continue, Your Honor?
Yes.
Thank you. When you were recounting the conversation that Ms. Reed indicated that she was upset about, you also indicated, in addition to using the phrase, her last words to him, you also said that it was earlier in the night, correct? They had an argument earlier in the night.
I don't recall.
May I have just a moment, Your Honor?
Yes.
May I approach?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you don't mind, take a look at the top paragraph. Very, very small print. Let me know when you've refreshed your recollection.
Yes.
Great. May I approach?
Yes.
Thank you, sir.
You got it.
When you wrote your report, you had indicated that when she was describing the argument that you testified to on direct, it was about an argument that was, quote, earlier in the night.
Earlier in the night, correct.
Okay. And then you recounted that statement, that same statement in the grand jury later on as at least including, quote, her last words. Is that right?
Her last words.
You were talking about an argument that they had, and then she was upset, and you were paraphrasing her, and one of the things that you paraphrased was, in fact, your statement was she was upset that that was like her last words to him, correct?
She said that.
Yes.
Correct.
Okay. Were you also made aware, did she tell you that her last words to him were in voicemails? Did she say that?
She didn't give any details.
Did you ask her What were your last words to him?
I did not.
Did she ever say whether or not she believed he ever received her last words to him?
There was no other details other than what she said.
Okay. But she did, when she was having this conversation with you about her last words to him, she did actually take out her phone and show you a bunch of missed calls to him at the same time, didn't she?
She tried to, yes.
Okay. In your mind, did you put two and two together that what she was actually talking about were the missed calls and her being upset about her last words to him being very angry on those missed calls, those voicemails? Did you put those two things together?
I didn't.
Okay. Thank you. That's all I have.
Hey, Mr. Brennan.
So when Ms. Reed told you that she was sad because her last conversation, her last thing that she had said to him was an argument, did she ever suggest that was in a voicemail?
Objection.
Oh.
Did she ever suggest it was in a voicemail?
She did not.
Did she ever suggest that she didn't actually speak to him, but instead it was some type of message?
Objection.
I'll allow that.
Did she ever suggest that?
She did not.
In fact, you wrote a report saying that there was an argument earlier in the night, didn't you?
Objection. Your Honor.
Sustained.
You then were interviewed, weren't you? Were you interviewed on February 14th, 2022?
Yes.
And you referred to the fact that she told you there was an argument earlier in the night?
Argument earlier in the night.
Okay. And she was telling you this when you were speaking to her that morning?
Correct. Around 6 a.m.
Right. Yes. And earlier in the night, do you know if she was referring to 12:30?
I did not know.
Or 12:15?
No.
Or midnight?
Objection. I didn't know the time.
So his answer is he doesn't know.
You testified in the grand jury, and Attorney Jackson just asked you some questions about part of the statement you made to the grand jury when he said, like her last words. Would you like to put that in context of the whole statement you made? Do you remember
her last words?
Do you remember the entire statement that you made in the grand jury about the statement that was made to you?
I'd have to.
May I approach?
Yes.
This is page 81, lines 1-4. Please read it to yourself.
Right here, sir.
1-4, please.
Yes.
Now, when you made that statement you were asked about in the grand jury, you didn't just say, like her last words, did you?
No.
You explained your memory to the grand jury?
Objection.
Ask him what he told the grand jury.
Okay. The grand jury, do you know it was on April 21st, 2022?
Yes.
Okay. And did you tell the grand jury? So she
Objection. I'm going to see counsel at sidebar for a second, please.
May I approach?
Yes.
Sir, I'm showing you that statement that you made. That includes the last words. But there's more to the statement, isn't there?
She was upset.
I'd like you to read your entire statement, 1 through 5. You can read that out loud.
So she was also, she was upset also because she said they had, you know, the last time they had talked, she had gotten into an argument. So she was upset that that was like her last words to him.
And so when you were speaking about her last words to him, were you referring to the argument?
Correct.
You testified again regarding this issue, didn't you, in May 3rd, 2024?
Correct.
Okay. And at that point, did you think or believe that the conversation she was relating to you was about a voicemail?
Objection.
I'm going to sustain the objection.
Did you use the word again on May 3rd, 2024, argument?
Objection.
I'm going to allow this.
I used argument.
May I approach, Your Honor?
Yes.
Can I ask you to read your prior statement on page 10, lines 9 through 13?
Objection.
I'm going to see you at sidebar again and bring these documents, please. Bring all of it.
May I?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Thank you. Sir, when you wrote the report of your notes to put in your report, do you remember the word argument?
I did.
Do you remember her actually saying the word argument?
I did.
Do you remember her ever saying any word about voice messages?
I did not.
You said that there was somebody in the front seat of the car with the defendant?
It was.
And you later learned from the defendant it was a person by the name of Kerry Roberts?
Correct.
Can you share with us the context? How did you learn that?
The defendant and my partner, Firefighter Whitley, had a conversation.
Objection.
I'm going to allow it.
So the defendant brought up how if her husband had died at the time, she didn't know how she was going to take care of his kids.
Objection.
I'm going to allow this.
And Firefighter Whitley mentioned that she had like a strong support system. You know, all the friends are on Canton. And,
Objection. Angry approach.
Yes.
When you spoke to the defendant and she shared with you that her last words with her husband were an argument, why didn't you ask for more detail about that?
I didn't feel it was my, you know, at the time we went about the call as that we didn't, you know, think we would be witnesses in a murder trial. You know, we were there to support Karen and ultimately get to the hospital safely.
And you were asked about trauma, and you said that you observed that the person may be in trauma, Ms. Reed.
A traumatic event, like...
Traumatic event.
Right.
Do you have any idea what caused that traumatic event?
I did not.
Thank you. I have no further questions.
Anything?
Very briefly, you indicated that you were asked on redirect examination by Mr. Brennan whether earlier in the night could have been 12 or 12:15 a.m., correct?
That's what he asked, yes.
And earlier in the night could have been 6 o'clock p.m.
Early in the night, yeah, correct.
Could have been 5 o'clock p.m.
Could have been.
Could have been 7 o'clock p.m.
Sure.
Okay. You were also asked whether or not Ms. Reed actually specifically mentioned voicemails when she talked about those last words. And you said she didn't.
Did I remember? Correct.
But she did show you her phone.
She tried to.
And she did show you a bunch of missed calls to John O'Keefe, correct?
I wasn't going to look through her phone. I don't know who she called.
Thank you. That's all.
When she said about the argument, she said those were the last words, the argument, right?
That's correct.
Sustained. All right. The jurors disregard that last statement. All right, you are all set.
All right. Thank you. Thank you.
Is this a good place to stop for the day?
If the court pleases, yes.
Jurors, we could do 6 minutes, but I think we'll just, this is probably a good place to stop. All right. So, as I understand it, folks, we're on schedule, right where we thought we would be. We're going to release you for today. Now, when I told you this morning, and I've told you other times too, that when you're out in that room waiting for us, we're in here getting work done to make things more efficient for the trial, especially a trial this long. We've decided that we're going to spend Monday afternoon again trying to streamline this trial and deal with issues that we have to deal with. So Monday for you will be a half a day. All right, so I just wanted to tell you that before you left today. Please, again, those three cautions. Do not discuss this case with anyone. Don't do any independent research or investigation into this case. If you happen to see, hear, or read anything about this case, please disregard it. Let us know. And I guess the fourth caution is the same as I've been saying. Please be very careful with your social media. All right. Have a good weekend. We'll see you Monday morning.
All rise to the court, please.
And I'd like to see counsel at sidebar, please.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Remember those endless summer days that felt like they just last forever? Sun rays kiss your skin, grass tickles your toes as you bite into the creamy popsicle melting in your hand. Pure, unbothered bliss. Capture more sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. This nostalgic vanilla flavor with notes of candied orange can help keep you hydrated while savoring your favorite golden hour moments. No matter how hot your summer gets, just one stick of Liquid IV and 16 ounces of water hydrates you better than water alone. It's three times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, with 8 vitamins and nutrients for refreshing on-the-go hydration. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout. That's code INDULGE20 at liquidiv.com.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.